Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
I
the only one who enjoys that, hooray.
Oh,
Fine.
you know, it's not so bad. It's just, I don't know why we started doing that at the start. Anyway, I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me today are Abigail Bain
Hello.
and Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
And it's just us, because we're the grown-ups who want to talk about a grown-up film this week. It is the cheery and happy Bring Me the Head of Andy Garcia, or Antonio Banderas, or Alfredo Garcia. What's the name of the film?
Bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia.
Oh, Alfredo, that's not a famous actor at all.
No.
No.
It's the character in the film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, guys, I picked this. Because I wanted to give us something. We usually do family movies because they're the most mediocre films of all. So I wanted to have something a little more just grown up, or just a few have a few more adult things in. Not necessarily something particularly mature, but just something that only people over 18, as far as the BBFC or whatever the American rating system is, can watch. Have I made sense grammatically there? I don't think I did.
Yeah.
You made your usual amount of sense.
Oh, thanks. That'll do. So, guys, that's why I picked it. I wanted something a little more crime thrillery because we don't watch that many of those. I'd seen this a little while ago, thought it was, good, intriguing, and I put it to you guys to watch. And you have now. So, what were your expectations going in? Let's start with Abby.
Well, I'd seen it before. Yeah, I was going to have a Sam Peckinpah season, but I couldn't get hold of enough things at the time
When you say season,
to be able to.
again, you talk about seasons as if everyone knows what a season is. I think they're exclusive to you, Abby.
No, film seasons are common.
Yeah, but it's not like the Universal Sam Peckinpah season happened at any point.
I was going to have a look at a bunch of Sam Peckinpah films because I felt
Because
like it.
you felt like it, and you just didn't do that many, so it doesn't count as a season. And what were you expecting going in then?
Well, being that he is a pioneer of ultraviolence, I was expecting some ultraviolence. Other than that, grit.
Grit.
I didn't know that much about it. Also, it's Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, so I guessed Latin America.
You expected Latin America. Well, I think it delivered on mostly what grit and ultraviolence. Is ultraviolence anything like ultraviolet?
No.
Oh, good. Jamie, expectations with this one.
I'd never heard of it, and this is actually the only, or the first at least, Sam Peckinpah film I've watched. So I just heard Abby make a really surprised little noise.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
did.
no, I've like I'm aware of Straw Dogs.
Sure, I've not seen that either myself.
And I'm aware of its reputation, and I've seen like quite significant chunks of it, but I've never sat and watched it properly. So this is actually the first time I've sat and watched a Sam Peckinpah film. And I watched the trailer. And I think I was expecting something. It might sound weird considering the nature of the actual film, but I was ex it, expecting something from the trailer quite like more exploitative than it actually ended up being.
Sure.
And maybe a bit more almost kind of grindhouse.
Yeah, I can see that, especially with when you use like Abby mentioned ultra-violence, and to me, like the there's hitting each other with pillows and then there's being shot and then that's it. Like, and for me, ultra-violence sounds much more tantalizing than a few people get shot. A lot. I mean, a lot of shooting, or someone gets bludgeoned, or it's vaguely graphic rather than implied. So it can be this weird thing where the idea of something like ultra violence can put you off, or raise your expectations, and then it isn't quite what you expect, and it's weird.
A phrase like ultra-violence to me would suggest something really gratuitous, like, you know, it just being done for the sake of how much blood and gore can we get, how uncomfortable or sick can we make people feel, which this kind of... It wasn't gratuitous, but it was... It didn't, you know, pull any punches with the violence either.
It was blunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, just, you know... Well, you know, in real life, not a lot of violence happens unless, you know, you're a skinhead and you get in fights all the time or something. But most people, you know, spend their lives not being shot 7 times in the chest. Whereas films often have people getting shot, if they're crime films, at least. So, there's quantities of violence that you get used to as a cinema watcher that people who maybe don't watch crime films aren't used to, so it's more shocking then as well. So maybe that's a factor to the expectations of how much violence is going to be in something.
It was banned in a couple of countries. Sweden, Germany and Argentina.
Do you know why?
No, IMDb's not telling me. But it probably... again, because for the time, like, I'm maybe now saying it didn't seem exploitative because I'm watching it in 2013, not 1974.
Sure.
Because there's a bunch of stuff in it, like, it could have been the violence, it could have been violence towards women in particular, it could have been, like, nudity. But...
Yeah, it could have got to where, you know, it was 15 minutes in the film and a woman is suddenly elbowed in the face and falls unconscious. The censors in Sweden went, ooh, you know, no.
Yeah, we're not interested, thank you.
Yeah.
It could have been the terrible fashion sense on some of the characters. Occasionally, there's some really clashing ties and shirt combos that are just offensive to certain people.
If Warren Oates doesn't take his sunglasses off at some point, we're just going to ban this film outright.
Yeah.
There isn't a whole lot of plot to talk about in this film, per se. There's just a lot of travelling and a lot of getting shot.
I quite liked that about it. It was almost like this little odyssey that he goes on because he kind of falls into this situation and then stuff just unfolds in front of him rather than there being a plot. Stuff just keeps happening around him or to him.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like at the start, it's around and to him. And then the further in they get, the more he just sort of, no, I've had enough of this. I'm getting on top of this situation.
Yeah.
In many ways, it's a bad decision that causes a downward spiral in a guy's life. Speaking of guys, who is the guy we're talking about, and who is he played by, and what are the rest of the credits that I forgot we should do at the top of the show?
Shall I?
Please.
Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia is from 1974. It was directed by Sam Peckinpah and stars Warren Oates and Isela Vega. Warren Oates played Benny, the lead character in this movie.
So, let's talk about the setup of the film then. Basically, Benny... it doesn't really start with Benny. It starts with a pregnant woman at a duck pond who's having a nice, serene rest. And it could have just stopped there, and it would have been nice. But it has to carry on and be a gritty crime film after all. And it turns out that pregnant lady in Mexico has had an affair. Is it even an affair? Who is this woman? And how does it relate to...
She's the daughter of the guy who's the patriarch, basically, of this little community. And I don't think it's said, but she looks very young.
Sure.
So I don't know if the idea is that his young daughter has been defiled by Alfredo Garcia, who he says was like a son to him. So now he's like, I want his head. I want him dead and proof that he's dead.
Yeah, so Alfredo Garcia, who we never really see, apart from maybe the hair on the top of his head briefly, and a photograph, he has offended a mafia mob boss cartel dude. I don't even know. He's just criminal.
Yeah, they never really go into it.
Yeah, and he wants the head of Alfredo, and that sets up a bunch of goons looking and searching for him in the... Is it across the border of Mexico and America? Or, you know, does it stay in one place?
No, I think it's a border thing because they cross into Mexico later on.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the top gangsters are Americans, and a lot of them are Mexican as well. And they sort of make inquiries and stumble upon our lead man, who is playing piano in a bar down Mexico Way. And does anyone else want, you know, I mean, let's not just run through the movie as is. Topics and things you want to talk about, any suggestions?
Well, I liked the way that they didn't speak English for quite a while at the beginning of this movie, and it wasn't subtitled.
Yeah, it was just throws you in and says, they go, deal with that.
Oh, not Mexican. Oh, tough. Start learning. Yeah, it is kind of interesting, because it's the sort of thing, the gestures and what they're doing sort of tells you enough about what's going on. Mm. But you might be thinking initially, oh, wait, are there supposed to be subtitles? You might spend a bit of time fiddling with your remote, wondering, have I got the settings on wrong? Perhaps.
But it doesn't, you don't need to know what they're saying. I'm glad that they didn't do some sort of, like, you're never going to do anything but hokey dialogue for a dad who's annoyed that his daughter's been knocked up.
Yeah. And, you know, people like Tarantino might like to put some juicy dialogue into hitmen in a car driving down the street. But sometimes it is interesting to not know the enigma of, well, we could probably assume what these guys are saying. They're probably not talking about their Barbie collections, are they? So it is interesting, and you're kind of relieved once a few of the American characters do start speaking English, and you're not just going to be guessing the whole way through. But it is an interesting idea. So what do we make of, is it Warren Oates who plays Benny?
Yeah.
Yes.
He is our main guy, so I guess just thoughts on how he played his character or whatever.
I thought he was well cast because he was in no way a handsome leading man.
No.
He was this kind of rough-looking, beaten up... He just didn't look like a leading man. He looked like a guy playing a piano in a bar.
Yeah.
Who, you know, he really looked the part, but he played it in such a way that even though he wasn't you know, magnetic in that kind of, you know, Tom Cruise or whatever kind of way, he was sort of effortlessly cool in the same way someone like Tom Waits would be, you know, like a piece of worn out furniture has come to life kind of thing.
And not in like a Return to Oz kind of way. No magical gumps.
No.
Hey, I know what you mean, because basically, it's the story.
He looked like he'd been carved from something.
And something that used to be something very nice previously, yeah, but is now subsequently worn out and needs to be carved.
Some kind of bit that broke off an antique.
Yeah. Either way, you need someone who is the sort of sleazy chancer who will take a dubious opportunity to earn some money. Because basically, it's not very legitimate or trusty. You can't really trust in the what was it? The deal. It's the quest he has to go on, which is basically a manhunt. He just knows a bit of stuff that the American hitmen are after, and he's like, oh, that you want to find Alfredo Garcia? Yeah, don't know him, but I do know him, and I'll see you later on, right?
Yeah, and, I'll ask my prostitute girlfriend.
And it, yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird, like, not ambiguity, but there's a lot of weird elements that just, nothing's clear cut in this film throughout, because he's a piano guy, but he's ex-army. We don't really know his full backstory. He's in a relationship with a singer / prostitute who...
I thought it was good that they didn't sort of hand you all the information. They just went, yeah, this guy's from here, this stuff happened to him once, here's his prostitute girlfriend. Like, there was no kind of exposition about the characters. You just kind of got what you were given, and then it was like, okay, let's get on with the story. Yeah. And you kind of glean what you glean from what they do rather than anything anyone says.
Yeah, because a real good demonstration of their relationship and their character was when they were in the bedroom in the morning.
Yeah.
And, like, that whole scene where he slapped her in the bottom with a towel.
Yeah, they're intimate and kind of like they sort of they have a very open relationship with each other, and they do everything from have romantic picnics to just fumbling about in the bedroom, and he gets weirdly physical with her in a sense. Like he just sort of when he's trying to ask her questions about where Alfredo Garcia is and what he was to her and things, he kind of sits on her really weirdly and just sort of bullies her a little bit in a sort of like intimate way, I guess.
It's the same way you would like pester a friend that you've known for years by giving them a dead arm, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it just because you just couldn't have a nicely polished and I don't know, maybe even a Pierce Brosnan type person. There just has to be something unsavory about how he looks and how he behaves because he's this character who's willing to take on a rather ridiculous deal involving find a guy, kill him, and bring his head for a few grand and don't ask any questions. You can clearly trust us. We've got terrible 70s suits on and look like bullies all of the time. We'd be perfectly trustworthy.
That was the one thing about this movie. I think, for me, because it's from a certain time and it's set in a certain place, it makes it fine that somebody wants a head delivered.
Yeah. It was the 70s. Everyone was up to gritty violence and dubious crimes. So, yeah, our main guy has this quest to find Alfredo, who has had a relationship or just maybe some casual sex with his semi-serious girlfriend come fiancé. It's not really the sort of guy who commits to any one label, I'd say, with his relationship.
Hmm.
But they basically go on a road journey to find Alfredo, who is dead. Anyway, conveniently, he doesn't need to be murdered because he has died. Does anyone remember how he died or if they said? Or
it was a car crash, wasn't it?
It could have been, yeah.
Yeah, because she explains it.
Hmm. So right off the bat, we know we're not in for that, oh, can I actually murder a man thing? It's just, oh, he's dead. I don't like that you slept with him. What's that about? But let's go get his head and collect the bounty. Hooray!
Yeah. Let's also, in the meantime, let's get married.
Yeah.
It's like, how about it?
You have kind of bullied me into it a bit, but sure. I guess I'll have a bit. I'm coming into some money. I'll let you know in bits and bobs as we go, because it's quite a dubious plan. I probably should have said from the get-go. But, you know, whatever. We'll do a bit of singing and picnicking, and it'll be nice.
It sets a whole different philosophical question as well. Because, like, could I kill a man is such a different question to can I desecrate a corpse?
Yeah, it is. It's still terrible in a way, but it is a bit more when you need some money and you're, you know, just in a slum area of Mexico and you're just playing piano in a bar. It's like, oh well, just, you know, desecrated a corpse and handed it in isn't so, you know, and this, you know, you're not actually doing anything to end someone's life. You're just an opportunist who's willing to get his hands dirty, you know. I'm not saying I morally agree with it. I'm just saying I understand.
It sort of plays into the fact that he doesn't look like a leading man as well, because
he's not killing someone. He's doing something dirtier and grubbier than that.
Because he can't really do anything else.
Yeah.
If he was more attractive, maybe he could
kill a man.
Do something different. If he was younger, maybe he could do something different. But he's just sort of, he looks the way he does. He is the age he is.
Yeah.
And he needs money.
He can't just quip, wink at the camera and get away with the murder. He has to, you know, just be a bit more like any person would and deal with it in a more serious way. So his girlfriend then, what do we make of the female lead? I mean, she's not in it all the way. It's called spoiler filled. I will spoil it. She is dead before the end, and a few more people besides that. But what do we make of the lead female character?
Her name is Elita. She's played by Isela Vega. I liked her.
Yeah, I think she had the same quality that Warren Oates did. Like, she, Like, she wasn't unattractive, but she wasn't, like, attractive in the way that, you know, a leading woman traditionally is.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, she looked like a real person.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing where if you'd have glammed this up, it would have become a bit more like Desperado, and then Salma Hayek would have been in it, and it would have been a bit more sassy, and she wouldn't have died, perhaps. Or if she had died, it would have been so Antonio Banderas can save the day, kind of. It would be a bit more Hollywood and a bit more shiny and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nice in a way that they went, not that she is that plain, she's very attractive. And I will say, you get to see a lot of her if you're in that. Because the thing with adult films, right, guys, is if there is nudity or sexual scenes, they're not always there to be tantalizing. Sometimes they're there to create an intimacy between you and the characters. I mean, you do get a sly bit of a look at a lady or a man, but fundamentally, I think in some adult films, it's there to be gritty and real rather than tantalizing. What would you guys say?
I actually was going to say, there's not that much actual sex. Like, I can't remember an actual sex scene, even though there is a lot of nudity and there's a lot of build up.
Hmm.
Yeah.
To a sex scene, but the way it's done is not sexy.
Sure.
No.
Like, it's done in a very almost kind of it is kind of almost voyeuristic. Like the scene where Benny and Alita are in bed when you first see them sleep together, it's shot in a way that it's like you're hiding in the corner watching them.
Yeah.
And you see them do stuff like play fight and the kind of things that you don't normally have in a sex scene in a film. And it's like you almost feel like you're just perving on them a little bit. And then there's the bit where the two bikers turn up and one of them takes her off into the bushes because they've got gun, they're armed, so Benny can't do anything. And again, it's shot at a distance, so it's like you're a third biker who's part of their group who's just kind of watching.
Mm.
Yeah. So you see it as a voyeuristic-y thing, and I think that's true because, you know, the reason people watch films is to see other people's lives a lot of the time, and it's a voyeuristic kind of thing to do in a sense. And when it's with more intimate moments, you are looking in on them. But I also think it's there so you side and sympathise with the characters and feel like, because you get to know them and everyone else in it is sort of incidental and a problem and an obstacle.
Yeah,
you kind of bond with the two characters you focus on a lot as well.
And but it comes with this film, and I thought it was one of the strengths of the film, is it comes from their actions and the performances rather than the film doesn't like
manipulate.
The film doesn't try. It doesn't pull you in and say, feel this, you know, sympathize with this character. You just sort of watch it unfold.
Yeah, and through the way actions that you do.
Yeah, and the way that they're played is what then makes you think. It is almost like you're, the whole time you're standing at a distance watching this stuff happen to actual people, rather than watching a movie.
Yeah. Saying that, they do occasionally have some quite good sound and music to sort of to enhance certain sequences of drama or tension. So there is a little bit of that playing in there. I guess really it's just a nice job from the main actors, and then all the incidental characters just look phenomenal. Like all of the kind of mob guys and villagers and gangsters and things we come across are just kind of interesting looking because it's the 70s, but also kind of nicely sleazy or authentically, I don't know, they just look authentic and as if they maybe are from the village they're shooting in, you know?
Mm.
Yeah, like they could have been local extras, not necessarily actors.
Sure.
I was going to mention next that they did a lot of things in this to make it seem authentic. Like, the cars are a bit rubbish.
Yeah. Some are overly rubbish. Like, there's one car that, they pretty much, all the cars that are driven are beaters. But there's one that a group of Mexican villagers and maybe some marshals or something jump in that is just dented. Every bit of it has been dented in or smashed.
It looks like, you know, someone had a go at it on Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
It's the car from the bonus stage.
Yeah.
And there's just other things as we went along, like this one. Well, when they went into the village, they were having a funeral, but and the funeral was for a kid. So it was just really, wow, this is like the really horrible bits of real life that nobody wants to think about, but you're making me.
It was gritty in a very, in the proper sense of the word. Like, I think the...
It actually had grit on it.
Yeah. No, the phrase as applied to films, gritty, is like overused a little bit too much now. Like, people apply it to like Batman and James Bond, and like I see what they mean, like gritty compared to what's come before, like you know, The Dark Knight is gritty compared to Batman Forever
or Batman or the 1960s TV show.
Or like Quantum of Solace is gritty compared to Moonraker, but not, they're not gritty in this kind of raw
way.
Yeah, it's like the film felt kind of dirty and dusty, and like it was, it would be put on in the cinema after someone found it at the bottom of a bin after 20 years kind of thing. Like, it had that kind of, almost that it wasn't directed, it just kind of came into existence through all the sleazy stuff that people do.
It is very,
raw, I think.
Yeah,
is the word.
Because I think sometimes people use gritty, like you say, wrongly. They try it, when they mean just dark topics or slightly more adult content, or just a little bit more edgy or something. Whereas grit for me has to be depravity and scumminess and poverty and low lives. You know, the proper. Let's get in with the peasants and the thieves. And have a look at what there's, what's going on. We see some particularly horrid hotels, and they're on like a sliding scale of absolute cesspit to horrible racist dive. You know,
when you know you're in a hotel where there's the toilet is a partitioned corner, and I guess
you've hit a low.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting as well is the little things they put in every now and again. Like, for towards the start, because it's basically a road journey for our two main characters until they pull over and... Well, anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. But there's a part where they shoot at some turkeys. Not they. Benny decides to just fire his handgun near to some people at some turkeys without actually trying to kill them. What? Why did he do that?
I think, sorry, Karen.
I was just going to say, it's one of those weird things that slightly unhinged people do sometimes. You know, like when you're a kid and you've got like a friend who none of you are really friends with, and he like throws a rock through a window or something. You don't quite understand why he did it. And he just runs off laughing, and you're like, well, now we might be in trouble. That it's that kind of... It's a very real thing because it's so unexpected and has nothing to do with anything else. It's just the kind of odd little thing that certain people do.
Yeah, like you say.
I think they needed it from a sort of story point of view as the first step up the mad ladder that he goes up.
Yeah, it's kind of planting the seed that he is not, you know... Maybe not playing with the full deck anyway.
He's a bit unhinged, isn't he? You have to get this idea that everyone else in the bar that he was in is just, they clam up, they don't say anything, even though they might know where he is. They don't want nothing to do with gangsters, they don't want to cash in, and they don't want to get involved. Yeah. So either out of cowardice or their own morally not caring, or just not knowing, he's the only person who sees a business opportunity. And I think the hitman even can tell that this guy, look at him with his sunglasses and his greasy moustache, he's going to know, and if he doesn't, he's going to find out. We can put some money in his glass and get him on the case.
Yeah.
So, I think maybe that is why they throw in these little touches of anarchy or just weirdness. And we're on this trip, and we get to a kind of a pivotal scene that Jamie has mentioned already. But basically, they have a picnic and a nice day, and they're being followed or tailed, as cool film people would say, by a couple of hitmen. I think they're Mexican, aren't they? Or they sort of.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a few people in this where they look a bit American and they're Mexican. There's just like, and even Elita looks quite white for a Mexican lady. She has quite what colour hair would you say she has?
Auburn.
Auburn.
Yeah, she was bordering out somewhere between brown and redhead.
Yeah, it's so I just mentioned because I just thought, oh, that's weird, because there's a point where she gets refused to stay in a hotel, but I wouldn't have even realized she's definitely Mexican, to be honest. Like, I don't know. Like, but either way, there's a lot of Mexicans and American hitmen knocking about, but there's two in particular that follow them. And anyway, I was kind of going to bring up the scene where they get into trouble with some bikers, and I got waylaid into thinking about other things. But basically, they decide, somewhat foolishly, to sleep out in the air after basically a nice day traveling on the road together. And some bikers come up and force, well, not force, ask if she could sing to them, and it's just really awkward, and everyone's just like, oh, don't say anything because you'll get in trouble, but also, what do you do in this situation?
That was another one of those scenes where, you know, the thing about Benny shooting at the turkeys, it's one of those situations that, even though, like, obviously it's an extreme situation, this, because there's the threat of sexual violence, but the initial awkwardness of those guys just kind of joining them and then being going like, okay, it's like when you're out in a pub and like there's a group of you and you're all fairly drunk and then a stranger just joins you. And like he might be like a little bit too old for all of you to be talking to, and he's obviously really drunk, and like he's got like a simmering violence about him, and but he's being really friendly to all of you, and you're like, don't say anything to him. He might go away, or he might hit one of us. And it really sort of effectively recreated that sensation.
What do you think, Abby, with this scene that unfolds?
It's slightly different for me than it might be for other people, because I recognise one of the bikers as Chris Christopherson. And
From what fame, Abby? From what fame for the listeners? And maybe for me and Jamie.
well,
Of
I
Chris
know more
Christopherson
of,
fame.
yeah,
Yeah.
I think he sang, he was a country singer before he was an actor, I think.
Sure.
And just, I associate him with being really, really nice. And so when he was that guy, it's, oh, it's Chris Christopherson. Oh, they're going to sing. Oh, he's going to. Oh.
Yeah, it is a weird one. I guess it's spoiled slightly if you associate him. You're like, ah, no. It's like you have to cast people who you think, well, even if they weren't an actor, they might be a despicable person. You have to, anyway, back to the gritty horribleness.
Yeah, it was a really effective scene. It just had a weird spin for me,
For you, okay.
personally.
Yeah, I think it is that weird thing where you kind of you put up. You kind of you deal with a really good tense moment in a movie because I don't know why, because you shouldn't want to be like, oh, I you kind of imagine and you feel for them because they're being awkwardly bullied by bikers in a sort of passive aggressive way, and then it just turns sour when they go too far, and it becomes basically what happens is Benny is kept rather poorly by a like if you're keeping I guess the husband figure away from your intended rape victim while your friend goes off into the field or whatever to have his way. Now, if you're playing guitar and hoping to keep them there while they're simmering and boiling over with anger and rage, you're not doing it right. You might want to think about holding the gun on him instead of just drinking and playing acoustic guitar. You know?
Hubris.
It was hubris. And it cost him because Benny gets the jump on him and manages to interrupt the other biker who has confidently just wandered off in front of the intended rape victim and just sat down waiting for her to get on with it. It's a very strange moment, really. They get to the point, well, they can't really run away, but you're very confident that they're not going to fight back and run.
I think in her case that's just a bit of character, you know, that because she is a prostitute, her, you know, the impression you get of her is her idea of what sex is a little bit damaged, you know. She comes across as damaged, you know. She's very needy towards Benny for a lot of the film, and like obviously there's some element of the word I'm looking for is not justification, but you know, because she's a prostitute, maybe then the sex, even when it's negative, and even when she doesn't want it, it gives her some kind of validation.
Mm.
So she's been taken off, and she's like, you know, by this guy, and it's like, well, okay, he wants to have sex with me. That's what I do, so I guess I better had, kind of thing.
I see it more as she kind of womans up and says, she kind of says to Benny, look, don't mess around. We don't want to die. I am a prostitute, basically. She doesn't say all this, but it's kind of like she's womaning up and saying, look, we'll get this over with. It should be easier for me because I'm a prostitute. Let's just not cause a problem and get away with our lives intact. And I think, in a sense, she's kind of trying to look just get on with it because she has to. But like, hooray, she's interrupted. Let's move off this disgusting grey area. Not grey area. Let's move out of this sticky dark place and onto other ones. But basically, Benny shoots them both. You know, if you want to see how it pans out exactly, watch it if you haven't. And if you have, you know what we're talking about. But yeah, they manage to get away from these bikers. They're left in the fields. And instead of calling the police, as is suggested by Elita, Benny says they just should plough on, sort the head out, and not get into any more trouble. And they have quite an interesting scene then in the next hotel, because they basically, she's refused admittance. Is that the word?
Yeah,
sure.
And that after a trying evening of, you know, avoiding being raped by bikers, they obviously are quite peeved that someone's being just a little bit annoying and racist. So he kind of forces, he just basically threatens and gets the room they want, the hotelier. And I put my sentence in a very weird way, but he threatens the hotelier. And they stay the night. And then there's quite a kind of interesting moment in the hotel after. Does anyone want to explain what happens, if you can recall?
There's kind of a moment of realization for the both of them, where they're like, it's like a non-traditional falling in love scene.
Yeah.
Like they rediscover each other all over again, and they like she's in the shower. You know, presumably traumatized by what happened.
Yeah, kind of upset, crying, or
yeah,
sitting.
And
there.
He just kind of joins her. They tell each other they love each other, and then like that's. And it's again because it's so non-traditional. It seems like a real moment.
Yeah, it felt kind of somewhat genuine, and it was good to not just have these two, you know, two people just going on a crazy crime journey. It was done out of desperation, in a sense, because they were both so poor.
And what happens to them along the way has some kind of effect on them,
and draws them together a bit more than perhaps they were, because they seem at the start maybe that their relationship's a bit more casual.
Yeah,
and has had some bumps on the road that aren't as literal. Anyway, so that I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was one of the moments that it tried to be genuine rather than just a thrill ride of crazy stuff. But what would you guys say is the next key scene in this movie?
It, you know, jumping ahead a bit, is when, you know, this is then followed up almost immediately, not directly, but they find the grave, they dig up the body, and then they're attacked and she dies.
Yeah.
Like, just at the point where it's gone, okay, yeah, they do need each other. Here they are falling in love all over again, and now she's dead. And
yeah.
That's the beginning of the end for Benny, really, in the long run.
Yeah, it does that thing. Instead of being a nice unconventional rom-com, it decides, no, we're going full revenge, tragedy, thrill, crime movie here, which is kind of what needed to happen, because it's just the way they go. It's the way the genre is. It doesn't end in happiness and smiles. It always ends in bitterness and death, usually.
It's also where the film's begins to become slightly more insane as well, because it becomes a buddy movie between Benny and the head of Alfredo Garcia.
It is particularly good when he starts talking to the head in a bag.
Yeah, and like he wants to keep it, and after a while, you want him to keep it too.
Yeah,
like you're like, yeah, the two of you, you know, you need each other.
Yeah,
he gets a strange relationship with Ice as well.
Yeah, I think it's to do with keeping the head preserved, isn't it? But it becomes significant.
it's just the way that he sort of, he takes his aggression out on ice a lot.
Yeah.
So yes, he needs it for the head, but I think he sort of needs it for his own peace of mind.
Yeah, it's just interesting that they took something practical and made it significant in that way. You know, like you see him stabbing at it and
yeah,
and then
not
putting it in the bag.
Keep your head, your severed head of a corpse in a bag. You'd need, if you're going to do that, you need preferably some kind of, you know, I mean, ambulance with a fridge. Basically, it's usually how heads get transported, I would have thought.
I don't think they get transported by themselves that often.
No, but when you've got a... Well, you know what I'm saying.
But severed things in general.
Maybe a picnic cooler box is the modern scenario you want. But anyway, he has a bag for Alfred. For me, the snapping point... And like you said, I don't want to talk about bags and heads just endlessly. But the turning point for me... Because basically, they've awkwardly turned up during a funeral. They've made all the people who... possibly knew Alfredo, feel very uncomfortable, and rightly so. And then they're staying there in a hotel and waiting to dig up the body and cut off the head or whatever of Alfredo Garcia. And they get jumped, basically, while digging up by the hitmen who've been following them off and on and avoiding little crashes just for our own amusement as well. That was a weird thing, that these hitmen just seem prone to breakdowns and nearly crashing into things. But I keep getting sidetracked. But for me, they dig this up, they get knocked out, and it's quite a touching scene, really, when Benny wakes up and is happy that he's alive and thinks she's alive, and they were just buried in the ground, like just covered over. But she has died, and he's trying to pick her up, and he's in denial. And then suddenly, the snap happens. And he's really annoyed with her corpse and is trying to put her back in the grave to be with the rest of Alfredo Garcia's body. And it's getting really, stay with him then. Stay with him if you love him so much. You know what I mean? And that is just the perfect change from when he snapped from denial to just, that's it for me now.
Yeah, he's just, I'm going to go mad then.
Yeah. Yeah.
He literally has nothing left. He can't get any money. He's lost the woman. Yeah. He can't go back to where he was working before.
Yeah.
And and then from then on, he basically catches up with the hitmen who had jumped them and killed his partner, and conveniently they've broken down, and he manages to kill them more or less, and gets the head and goes on his way, and he just does start talking to the head of Alfredo Garcia in the bag he has. And he does everything from argue and then apologize. He kind of apologizes at times, knows it, says it isn't Alfredo's fault. And it's just a really weird and interesting thing that happens from this point in the movie on, really, as you've mentioned, Jamie.
It's just like it becomes sad after a point as well. Like the scene where he showers the head.
Yeah.
And then just sits down with a drink and just cries. And you're like, oh, this is... I don't feel good for you now.
Yeah.
Like, where could this possibly end now?
He knows that as well.
Yeah, the film does a great job of conveying that at that point. It's like it feels completely hopeless.
It's just a very hellish low point to be at when all of that has happened to you, and yet you're alive and you just have choices to make.
Yeah.
And basically, the choice Benny makes is to go, do you know what? I deliver that. We think, we don't really know if he's planning from the get-go to just get revenge on all the people involved, all the criminals who started this, or just he needs to find out, or what, or if he's just going to try and cash in the head now and just take the money and get out of there. We don't really know until the end. I think there's things that happen to him that circumstances push him even further, because he doesn't just actively go, I'm going to kill the people who've done this to me. He tries to take the head and find out more about this, because he doesn't really know why. He doesn't even know who wants the head of Alfredo Garcia.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of other interesting scenes that happen. One I think that needs to be mentioned is he's caught up by the villagers who...
are related to Garcia in some way.
Yeah. And they kind of have all their guns on him and want him to, you know, explain his crazy actions. But then that gets made more complicated by two of the American hitmen turn up and sort of talk and get information from Benny. It's really weird, isn't it? It's quite a strange scene. It's not like anything else I've seen before. But Abby, how would you describe that scene that unfolds? Do you remember it particularly well?
I do remember that one. And it was just... This movie takes great pleasure in tormenting this man by keeping him alive.
Yeah.
And in that time, they've all the villagers have got the guns on him, they want the head back, he doesn't want to give it to them, but there's no way he can come out on top of this situation.
Hmm.
So the Americans roll in, and they kill all the people.
In a really brutal way, because just like, oh, they were all innocent people, more or less.
Yeah, and they just gun them down.
Yeah. And it's just really like, and then you kind of think, oh, Benny, don't join them. You're as bad as them, you know. And you kind of, it really toys with your emotions.
Mm.
Yeah, go on.
And but then they turn on him, and he has to kill them.
Yeah.
When really he would have been better off if he died there. Yeah. And he just keeps going.
Yeah,
because he can't go back.
Yeah, and it's just the scene ends, if I remember right, with him getting back in his car and driving off. And you do feel like, oh, you really are not having a good time anymore.
Yeah.
No.
Like, this has gone way out of control.
You somehow have slipped the noose once again, and yet you still are in the worst position you've ever been in. It's like
everyone around you is dead, and you're the one who's the worst off.
Yeah. It's good.
It's sort of like a perpetual... frying pan and fire.
But you can at least hand out some violent redemption to the other people in the frying pan or fire.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically, and happily for us, because we're glad to see any of the nastier criminals dead, killing innocents, how dare they? But basically, Benny gets on his way. He eventually gets back to the original sort of... room that the American Mexican-y cartel-y, I don't even know. They're just the American section of the headhunters.
Just some rich scumbags, basically. Yeah,
who will get paid a lot more than Benny will for handing in the head.
Have their feet pushed by women.
Yeah. It was really weird. It was really weird when one of the main top dogs in this hotel room full of, you know, sleazy gangsters is sitting in like fairly formal clothes, but is also in his pants as well, just with a woman that he's just casually touching the hair off. It's weird.
Yeah, and then he hits her, just not for any reason. He just hits her, and then gets up. And I think it's just you look at him and you think, "Oh, I hate you." And it, like, what can we do to make this guy seem really unpleasant? Let's have him make women wash his feet, and then he'll just hit one of them as well. And then he'll stand up and he's in his pants. Oh,
they're quite unsavory types.
Yeah.
And so many colours and just 70s fabrics going on. It's
the wood panel walls. Oh. And...
there's some interesting poverty-stricken hotels, and I just love all the aesthetic throughout.
I like that it's like the nicest hotel we see, and it's horrible.
It's just, you would cry if you had to sleep there for a night. But yeah, he gets to this scene where he brings, suddenly, in a kind of Yogi Bear, but with more irony, I don't know why I brought up Yogi Bear. Oh, because of the picnic basket that he now keeps Alfredo's head in. He is, because it was the poignant picnic basket from the picnic they had before his life turned to doo-doo. And he brings the head in that, and he's cleverly, see, you always have to have this clever moment where the anti-hero has a clever idea. And what he does is he keeps the guns in the picnic basket with the dirty, disgusting head so that he doesn't get, you know, frisked and found out. And then he decides, when they won't tell him anything and they give him his money and try and pay him off and get on his way, he whips out his guns and goes, "Do you know what? Bang, bang, bang. What is this about? Tell me. Oh, here you go. I'm about to tell you. Bang, you're dead too. Whoops, he wasn't pulling a gun. He was just telling me. Oh, well, more people. Bang, bang, bang. I've killed them all. And now I know where the guy who set this all up is. Excellent." What did you guys make of that kind of pivotal moment where he finds out what it's all about in this terrible hotel room full of horrible men?
I don't know. After seeing that guy get his feet washed, I was pretty pleased to see him get gunned down.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much in this movie for you to think, you need to die.
Yeah.
That's the currency of their world.
Yeah. It's weird in crime thrillers of this nature, because you go from wanting no one to die. You should, if you're a nice, moral, happy, normal person. You usually go in, you don't want people to die, and if they do die, they at least have to deserve it, eye for an eye kind of way. And it is this weird, when you get in this far with the movie, you do just need some death to happen to make it
Yeah.
okay that the ones,
The thing is,
people who didn't deserve to die, die.
I think it's because everything that has happened to Benny up to this point has been so horrible that you feel completely justified in whatever he chooses to do. You're just with him and thinking, do you know what? Just kill everyone. Forget it.
So basically, coming, we should may as well conclude with the final big finale, I guess, where Benny turns up and get and brings the head of Alfredo that he's continued to talk to along the way to the mansion where there's a celebration going on because I think the child has been born that
Yeah,
is presumed,
it's the christening of the child.
and that there's a party and fireworks and Benny's asked in and interrupts a little bit and is taken into the office or the boss's HQ room thing and the tension mounts again as we're not sure what's going to happen, how Benny's going to get out of this one again, or what even he's going to do. And the kind of the finale, I guess, is that he just kills some more people. He picks the right, he picks correctly. I mean, he's ex-army, I think we picked that up along the way.
Well,
Like, go on.
he kills the head of the cartel guy at the request of the daughter.
Before, I mean, he picks off the dudes with the guns, is what I was going to say. Which is that is always shoot the guys who are armed and able to shoot you first. That leaves you open to kill more people. Good call, Benny. And it's a good job there was some covering noise from the fireworks. Very nice. But yeah, he kills that guy, and it was interesting that they went with the mother who Benny doesn't really know, does request that he just kills the boss, and then he just obliges. And what do you guys make of that? What do you think he was trying to say as a film?
I'm not quite sure when this motif started, by the end, by that scene, he was saying no a lot. It was like, no, I've had enough. No, this isn't going to happen this way. And he was really trying to change something in that end part. So he was just, no, I'm going to shoot you. No, I'm going to shoot you. No, I'm going to shoot you. And you feel like if he can overcome this somehow, anything is possible.
He kind of, I think he does come to that conclusion himself as well, because initially when he's handed the case of money, he closes it and he says no. But then after he's shot everyone, he has this, like, he starts to leave. He takes the head again, and then he starts to leave, and he goes back and grabs the money as if he said, you know what? Yeah, I'm okay. I'm going to leave with the money and see what I can achieve.
I like that he has a quandary. He doesn't instantly become noble and on a proper I'll save the mother of this child and things. But he does eventually get there when he decides what to do. I think he's just a bit confused because he doesn't really know the full story. But he in the end decides to hand the money to the mother and say, spend this and save your son, and I'll take, the dad's head with me, and I'm gonna make, Weekend at Alfredo Garcia's too, and we'll have a nice funny time where I pretend the head is another person for another movie. Only, unfortunately, there are still a lot of henchmen at the head of this guy's house, and they gun him down as he's driving away. And it weirdly ends that he gets shot. You see he's dead, and that even if he isn't dead, there's a lot of them, so they're gonna kill him. And it just freezes on like a gun butt staring directly at the camera. I don't know what to make of that. It's as if, violence, think about it. It's what they're trying to say at the very end when
I
we've
think
been
it's just,
tantalized the whole way.
I think the gun, like that being the last thing you see, it's almost like the kind of, it's his inevitable death. You're just, that's what you're left with. It's just staring you in the face. It's like, yep, you knew he was going to die, and now he's dead because he had nowhere else to go.
And you just watched. You'll die if you don't turn the DVD off quickly because the gun will shoot at you.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like just saying that whole death is inevitable. Not just his, all death is inevitable.
I think the way I feel about real life violence compared to filmic violence is, when something is truly real, it is actually, you know, there's a tragedy there, and you play on real life tragedy with violence in movies, especially with stuff that like this. It's not based on anyone's life. It's just a crime thriller thing. I think it is enjoyable because you know it's not real, so you can kind of, you know, be drawn in, and it becomes a form of escapism because you're entertaining notions that you can't in real life, because you can't find out what it would be like to go on this weird thing without, you know, dying yourself or, be, you know, doing things you know. It's just, I just think it's interesting because I you know, violence is terrible in real life, but in films I'm a big fan of it, and this whole thing is kind of an interesting case study of.
I thought it was interesting that at the beginning of the film,
yeah,
when there is violence, it's quite not. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's disturbing, but it's like the scene at the very beginning where they first meet Benny and the women approach the two American, you know, guys who are in with the cartel, and he elbows that woman in the face.
Mm.
Like she goes to, like, she's rubbing the inside of his thigh, and he just elbows her, and she sprawls out on the floor unconscious. And that kind of took me back a little bit. And there are certain little moments of violence that are quite shocking. But as the film goes on, and as Benny deteriorates and his situation gets worse and the violence gets more extreme, it also almost kind of becomes more satisfying because of what you've seen him go through. It's like, yeah. And then so by the time he shoots the head of the cartel, you're sitting there thinking, yeah, good.
Yeah.
And then you kind of think, what? Why am I reveling in this?
Yeah, because I don't even necessarily agree with the idea of an eye for an eye in terms of, I mean, you know, that's the kind of, that's an ethical position you can have in life that is acceptable to some people. But I don't even think if someone does wrong to you, they deserve the same back. I just, you know, I'm pretty happy for just, I want everyone to go to prison if they do wrong. You know, like, it's not, I'm not as harsh, really. And yet, in a film, it makes you want that. And I don't know, I just think it's because, you know, really, it's not real. So it's okay.
It's to do with fantasy. Because when there's people starting to get gunned down, you're like, those people are fine, those are squibs, that's okay. But when you see a woman get elbowed in the face, you're a bit like, the only way you really could have done that is if that woman got elbowed in the face.
Yeah. But you also buy into the illusion as well. So a lot of the time you feel for people you know are wearing squibs and not really dying. And it's just, you still buy into it because it's such a convincing thing. I mean, I'm getting into how the medium of film works now. There's no point. We should talk about our thoughts on the film in general. I think we've talked enough, right, guys, about the film itself?
I think so.
We need to wrap up. Final thoughts on the film. Your general overall reaction, and I think the rating system could be just bags or things you can carry stuff with, because that's awful. and all my rating systems have to be awful or I don't feel right. So think of a bag or some kind of carrying item that can rate this movie overall rather than say 9 out of 10 or whatever.
Okay.
Well, my final thoughts about this movie are, I like this movie for the same reason that I like all sort of marginal directors.
What's a marginal director?
A marginal director are directors who have done well, but aren't willing to sort of do what producers want and didn't do as well because of that.
Yeah, they entirely do their own thing.
Sure.
Because Sam Peckinpah is very famous, but
not in a Spielberg way.
Yeah. And I like this because it has a clear authorship and it is very raw.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't get from other directors.
Sure. Have you got a bag in mind?
I do. It's just sort of, you know, in the media, sort of stuff in the 70s, stuff like that, where potatoes used to come in that rough Hessian bag.
Yeah.
That
works, because it does feel like it's just sort of dirty and covered in soil, and a lot of the characters get filthy as they go on, much like a potato bag, and it does inhabit dirt and grit, and I like that. It's a nice analogy.
Thank you.
Jamie?
Okay. this same kind of thing. I liked how earthy it was.
Mm.
It felt like it looked like it felt like it was being held together. Kind of it kind of felt like Benny looked and came across as the film. But like the whole film felt like it was just kind of holding itself together.
Yeah.
And you could see like you could see how it was a film, if you get what I mean. Like it wasn't slick, but it didn't seem amateur.
Mm.
Like it seemed like it was made by someone who maybe didn't have a lot of money, but the drive, you know, they knew exactly what they wanted to get out of the process.
They had a dirty, scruffy vision that they wanted to execute.
And also I did quite like how like slightly grubby I felt after watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Like, I just, oh, well, that was good, but I need a bath.
You should have perhaps also have got a slight bit of tense sweat forming on in your, just gently, you should be a bit worn out by the movie, you know, like,
yeah
as well, you know. So a bag, Jamie.
This might need some explaining, actually, because if there's anyone who listens, and anyone who listens outside of Wales, we get charged for carrier bags, which only happens in Wales, like little plastic carrier bags that you get in a supermarket. Mm. You have to pay 5p, and I would say it's one of those, like, you only paid 5p for it, it's cheap, and on the surface you think, well, this is disposable, I'm going to carry my milk home and then I'm going to throw it away, but you kind of ball it up and add it to all your heftier bags, and then it comes in handy later on when you need a bin liner.
I sort of get where you're coming from. As it isn't the bag for life that you proudly keep and use, but you do keep it because it'll come in handy one day. And like you say, it might be a reference point for you in future, or it might just be something to line your bin. I get where you're coming from. It's always difficult to metaphorically rate a movie, and I sympathise with the task I give everyone.
Especially when you pick something like bags.
Yeah.
What about you, Rich?
What do I think? I obviously liked it. I thought it was intriguing. I didn't quite know what to expect from it the first time. And when it's very much my bag. That's not the rating system. That's just the turn of phrase. This kind of thing. I do like gritty crime movies. And I like something about an anti-hero's journey. And I like revenge stories. And I just like to see this kind of crime world because it's so far removed from anything I do. I like it. I like its authenticity. I like its dinginess. And I like being taken on this strange, dirty journey into dubious criminal country, I guess. I'm not saying Mexicans are criminal country. I'm just saying the genre. I feel like I'm digging a hole. And not for the head of a corpse that I need to cash in either. Right, bag. What bag is this? For me, it is a really naff bowling ball bag, but from a really cool bowler. Because being the best 10-pin bowler is not cool. But if you're the best at it, then you know... There's some gravitas that the bag is lended because it's the, you know, maybe one of the guys from Kingpin or something.
It may not be generally considered cool, but somebody somewhere is going to admire you.
Yeah. Someone's going to go, oh, look at this dude. Look at this player's bag. You know,
yeah.
It's still within the 10-pin bowling / rubbishy, dirty crime movie world, but it's the legend's bag, you know? Anyway, what I'm saying is, I think it's kind of a bowling ball bag, but of a legend bowler, but it still isn't that cool and mainstream because it's bowling. And in this case, it's just a gritty crime film. And it's seen a few bowling balls in its time, and it's worn out, but it's so cool because it's intentionally a legendary bowling ball bag. It doesn't make sense what I'm saying, but I'm going with a bowling ball bag anyway. Make your own metaphor up if you've got a better one.
Okay.
I'm the worst at this. I don't like conforming to regular, it is 4 stars. anyway, that was our episode on the head of someone or other in a bag. And
the head of Alfredo Garcia.
Yes, the head of whatever it is.
Picked.
Yeah. The head of Almari. What is it? Sorry. Bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia. Yeah, I said it right. Shut up. I know what it's called. I'm being a fool. Guys, we should say goodbye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.